Hello, fine folks, cerebral flexors. Episode 41. This is about our favorite books and our favorite authors. I think it should be a tantalizing episode. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning. Did you just, I don't think we've called anyone cerebral flexors before. I like that.
I don't know what they should be labeled. Maybe they should label themselves. Comment below.
I don't know.
I love comments.
I haven't been seeing a lot of cerebral flexing in the comments lately. Okay, we're going to move on before we go off the rails.
You want me to give a little intro?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, yes, please.
It's been an interesting morning, to say the least.
Yep, indeed. I didn't really start reading a whole lot till I was about 19 years old.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Wow.
I was forced to read a lot in school. I read things like The Hobbit and Grapes of Wrath and The Great Gatsby and The Jungle in high school. But it wasn't until I was out of high school that I picked up books like 1984, Animal Farm, The Communist Manifesto, and A Brave New World.
They didn't make you read Animal Farm or 1984? What? They didn't make you read Animal Farm or 1984.
Hell no, those are anti-establishment themed
books. Interesting.
So they don't want you to read things like that.
Huh.
In
my curriculum that I had, I mean, I guess it was a homeschooling curriculum, but in my curriculum, our last year they made us read a bunch of those books. Maybe it's because it was homeschooling and not the public school system.
I don't know. Though. That's a great curriculum.
Huh. Okay.
I wish they would have done that for us.
I assume that they made people read those, but I guess not.
I was shocked they let us read the Jungle. Anyway, so yeah, those books really kickstarted my love affair with reading due to their anti-establishment themes. And it wasn't until I met my wife, actually, that I really started reading fiction. I was reading more just, you know, history and nonfiction books, Noam Chomsky, things like that. And then I was making fun of my wife one day about Harry Potter and all the Harry Potter books. And she said, if you want to keep making fun of me, you at least have to read them. And so I read them all and I couldn't make fun of her anymore because I enjoyed her dorky books very much. And then I found that I loved fiction. So,
you weren't big into reading and you weren't big into fiction until you read Harry Potter.
I wasn't big into fiction till Harry Potter.
Okay.
And I wasn't big into reading till 1984. And The Communist Manifesto. So I've been digesting tons of literature since I was 19. But that point, I was just a pothead skateboarding partier.
So you're trying to catch up with the years that you missed out on. See, I think I started reading, I want to say I was like 10 or 11. And I was very into, from a young age, fiction literature. I've always liked history, but I liked fiction a lot. And I guess one of the first authors, I guess I can kind of jump into and talk about real quick is Brian Jakes. And he is an English author. He wrote this series called the Redwall series, and it's essentially about animals. They're all rodents, so like mice, rabbits, badgers, smaller mammals. They live in this abbey called Redwall, and it's set in medieval times. And each book follows like a new character who picks up the sword of Martin the Warrior, who was the founder of the abbey. And they usually battle these bad guys, and the bad guys are usually like pests like vermin and ferrets and stoats and stuff like that. And they would just like have battles and go on adventures and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed the world that he built, and it kind of inspired me to actually start writing my own stuff. And I found an online, because it was right around the time the internet was getting big and we'd gotten a computer, that I was really into reading that series. And I found online Redwall forms, and I built my own form actually, where we could role play back and forth, and we'd write as a certain character and do like interactive stories and stuff like that. And so Brian Jakes, especially with the Redwall series, was like fundamental to me wanting to be a writer and inspiring me to write and getting into web design so that I could build a space to write with other people. And it was a fun time before I became much more cynical.
But what they're all carrying swords in these pictures I'm looking at. Like, was there actual blood?
Well, it was. They're not like picture books. Like, they're for like young.
Yeah, no,
kids.
I meant in the writing. Like, did any of these animals stab the other animals?
Yeah. There was warfare between them. I don't think he ever got particularly gruesome with it. He didn't like George R. R. Martin anything, but yeah, there were bad.
Yeah, there was no like, and then that. Then Patrick the Weasel's head rolled across the floor.
I mean, I if I remember correctly, there may have been some beheadings. So slightly brutal, but not overtly gory or anything like that. There was no like, there's no sexual themes or anything like that in there. It was completely like feasts and adventuring and battles. It's very whimsical, actually. So.
Huh.
And then obviously at the time, another two and bigger influences would have been J.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, and C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. I think I probably had read and listened to the Chronicles of Narnia before I got into Redwall, and I always enjoyed it, but Redwall was the thing that made me want to write because I found an online community to write with about that world.
I found a list of all the deaths in Redwall.
There's a lot.
There's a ton.
Yeah.
People are crushed, stabbed, impaled, shot.
Yeah.
Strangled.
Yeah.
Was some eat the other one?
I believe there was a snake in one that ate certain characters.
Mingo was eaten by Asmodeus.
Yeah, Asmodeus was the snake.
And then Asmodeus, poison teeth, his head was cut off by Matthias.
Yeah.
This shit is brutal.
Yeah. I was like, all right,
great.
I was like,
that's a good upbringing.
Yeah, it's 10 or 11. It's good.
I like it.
I was rebelling against my Christian household at a young age by reading the Redwall series.
It's amazing.
Well, my
I didn't
mom,
even know children's series like this existed.
Yeah, well, my mom, she was, I'll never forget this too, because I to this day still find it funny. She was like uber Catholic and Christian at the time too. And it was one of the things, like, it didn't have magic or anything like that because she was super anti-magic. Because a lot of the evangelical churches around the time are all like, Pokemon is evil. You're summoning demons. And Harry Potter's bad because they drink blood in it and blah, blah, blah. They're teaching your kids Satanism. So I wasn't allowed to enjoy Harry Potter or anything like that. And I actually remember seeing a video cassette tape somebody had loaned her, because I think I was arguing with her because I watched Narnia and I enjoyed the books, and in Narnia there's magic. I mean, it's all like Christian symbolic magic, but there's still magic in it. And I wanted to read Lord of the Rings because that came out, God, in 2001 was when those started to come out. So, early 2000s. So I wanted to read those and get into those and watch those. And she was against it because Gandalf's a wizard and there's magic in it. And magic's bad. And I'll never forget seeing this audiobook somebody had lent her. And the audiobook was why the magic in Tolkien and C.S. Lewis's world is good, but the magic in Harry Potter is bad. And even at the young age of, like, I don't know, 12, I was like, that's stupid. The fuck?
Well, like, having a sky daddy that watches you when you poop or masturbate, that knows everything you do all the
time.
You're
not supposed to masturbate.
Creepy and magical.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're not supposed to. I don't know if I ever read that in the Bible.
I think there's something about spilling your seed on the ground and wasting it or something. I don't know.
Well, you can catch it in a cloth. I guess spilling. Oh yeah. Oh, that, I think it's more from Catholicism, like Monty Python, The Meaning of Life, that intro song.
Yeah.
Every sperm is sacred. Yeah.
I never thought about that. That's such a great counter argument. All right. Listen, kids.
So you meant the movies of Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
2001.
Yeah. That's when those came out. And so because those came out, Like, it was really big at the time, and I'd seen part of the Fellowship, and I wanted to read the books because, you know, I think it was PG-13 and the orcs were very demonic looking or something like that. Or she didn't want me watching a movie that had demons in it and stuff. I don't know. So I was like, well, let me read the books. She was like, no. And then one of her friends was like, actually, you can let him read the books because, you know, the magic in there is good, but the magic in Harry Potter is bad. Whatever. Oh, my God. So those, I would say those are those three authors, Brian Jakes, J.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis. They're what inspired my love of fiction, inspired my love of wanting to read things on my own. And they also inspired me to want to be a writer and to write my own books.
All right.
Let's talk about some of yours.
All right. I would say my favorite author is Christopher Moore out of San Francisco. He writes comic fantasy, and I've collected, I think, all but three of his books. So I still have work to do. But I read his books, Coyote Blue, Practical Demon Keeping, Island of the Sequined Love Nun, Fluke, Lamb, Bloodsucking Fiends, You Suck, Fool, The Serpent of Venice, Shakespeare for Squirrels, Noir, Secondhand Souls, Bite Me, and Sacre Bleu. I have read The Lust Lizard of Melancholy Grove, but I never bought it. He's just a very funny man. And he goes to the locations geographically. He travels to certain places and studies their history before he writes. He knows a lot of history. He's read all of Shakespeare multiple times. He's very well read. And he just kind of makes fun of different historical things that have happened. Like, Fool is about King Lear's fool, the jester, and it follows him. And there's three books with him. Pocket is his name. And it's amazing. It's just, and he has one where Jesus's best friend, Biff, that's in the book called Lamb. And Biff has to, like, protect Jesus because Jesus is too honest all the time. Like, people come up and he's like, how much money you got on you? And Biff's like, we have nothing. And Jesus is like, why are you lying to them? We have.
So you're amazing. So you're Jesus and I'm Biff.
Maybe to a certain extent.
You're very direct sometimes.
I am.
And I'm like, yo. I wouldn't
say I'm direct to the point of hurting myself. If someone like came up and tried to rob me and I had like $5,000 on me, I'm going to still say I have nothing. I'm not stupid honest.
No,
I'm honest, though. Very honest.
You also sometimes you don't get sarcasm.
I don't know. But that might be because I'm on the spectrum to a slight degree. I don't know. I just don't get sarcasm sometimes.
We're going to talk about neurodivergent things in the next episode. Sort of. Kind of.
Kind of.
Kind of. Anyway. Christopher Moore.
I don't know. I've never been diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure they don't call it Asperger's anymore. But
so is Christopher Moore like the first person you read outside of like the 1984 Harry Potter thing that like really that you
no,
really
got no, into? I didn't start with Christopher Moore till like 10 years ago.
Well, who's the one that like you really got into then? Like what really that was made you
the first? The first person I really got into was Christopher Moore. I mean, I love reading. Ever since I read 1984, I was like, I need more knowledge. I can learn so much by reading. So, I mean, I've always been a big fan of learning.
You're at Fahrenheit 451 too, right?
No, I saw the little film. Okay. But I never read that book.
The book's better.
Okay.
Usually is.
But yeah, no, as far as fun reading, Christopher Moore got me going. Okay. So yeah. Do you have another one or you want another one from me?
I mean, I guess for me, the next big thing that I got into would have been, they're called the Edge Chronicles. And these I got into when I was like 12 to 14. And I liked these books not because they were particularly like super, I mean, they're not written badly at all. But in these books, they had a lot of illustrations. The Edge Chronicles is written by Paul Stewart and it's illustrated by Chris Riddle. And so in this world, he has a bunch of different creatures and stuff like that. And this kind of inspired my love of wanting to write stories with different humanoid creatures and anthropomorphic creatures and stuff like that, because in this world, Paul Stewart writes about all these different goblins and tree elves and bugbears and all these different creatures, and then Chris Riddle actually brings it to life on page with illustrations. So it's a young adult book with illustrations. They're really hard to find now. I don't think they were particularly popular, but I always really loved them, and I loved the illustrations in it, and it actually kind of made me like question why we don't illustrate stories anymore, because I also have a bunch of older books from like back in like 1920s to 1940s, like King Arthur and Robin Hood and stuff like that, and they're all written like old English, so they're boring as shit to read, but the illustrations in the books are really pretty, and it makes me sad that like more modern authors, like there's not really illustrations in books anymore. Like if you go to pick up a Stephen King book and read it, like there's not going to be illustrations of any scenes or anything like that. And that's like something I would like to do. It's on like my bucket list of if I ever were to get published, like that's something I'd want to do, is have some illustrations in my books, because I remember being really engrossed in those books. And I actually found them on Thrift Books recently and bought them all again, because when I moved from my childhood home, I don't know what happened to them, but I was able to find them on the market used, and they're just as magical as I remember them to be. And I love
them. You lost all your originals?
I lost the originals.
That's sad.
Yeah. That's okay though, because these ones are like, they're in great condition, and they're the exact published ones that I had. And they're just, they look like somebody else like read them and took good care of them, and they're only like slightly used, so it's kind of like they are the old ones that I lost, so it's nice. I like them. But yeah, that was like the one, and I think I read the Edge Chronicles before, again, because we were raised super Catholic, so Star Wars wasn't allowed. This was right before I was allowed to watch Star Wars and start playing Star Wars video games, which was great, because I got to start playing Star Wars video games in the golden age of Star Wars video games too. So yeah, like this was interestingly enough, like my introduction, the Edge Chronicles, was to like worlds with tons of different races and species and stuff.
I had no idea you were such a medieval like fantasy nerd.
How did you not know that?
I knew you were into it. I just didn't know that was like a part of your history to that degree. I thought we both agreed we just like, you know, the Renaissance fair, and we've read these books, but I didn't know you were like deep into.
Yep. Deep.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Like,
why is that so funny? You thinking of soaking? Stop it. Just... Moving on.
Like I said, it inspired me so much. I learned basic web design and how to build forms and learn how to advertise and put things out there, which I didn't realize were things you could use later in life, like, because I just wanted to like role play with like random people online who also like the series and like build a community and stuff like that. So
how did your site do?
It did well. I went through a couple different iterations, but the final iteration, I think I had over 100 people, and like 25 of them were active role players. So not bad.
Yeah, that's cool.
And they were like, I think most of them, like, yeah, I guess you can't really tell, but most of them were like young adults to teenage years. Like, I don't think there were any creepy pedos or anything on there, because there was, again, it was just like you write your character description and you go in and you, my character has dialogue with your character, and we write a story together, and we write battle scenes together, and we build it up. And it was like, it was whimsical fun. I miss it.
That is fun.
Yeah.
That was a good idea.
Yeah.
So not to lose steam, I guess I'll tell you another one of mine.
Yeah.
So I got into like manga, however you want to say it.
I know that you've read manga, and do you watch anime or no?
Oh yeah. I had
I've always wanted to know where you started and like
how three summers worth of what we called Japanimation at the time.
Okay.
We went to this place called Rentertainment in Urbana, which was entirely Japanese animation. Nice. The entire rent is like Blockbuster of Japanese animation. And it was probably one of the most exciting places we could go.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we rented everything. I've seen all sorts. I don't like the cute shit. I don't like when they have big eyes or like overly dramatic reactions.
Yeah, like the high school soap opera.
Yeah, all that crap. Things.
Yeah.
Like most of the stuff you'll find on Netflix, I don't like that cartoony shit. There is a good one on Netflix called Parasite, which was amazing. If you haven't seen that series.
I think you've told me about this one.
Yeah, it's sick. So I love Ninja Scroll. There was one called Kite that I really loved. It was a girl assassin.
Mm-hmm.
But more of the realistic ones. Of course, what's the one with the three kids and the motorcycles and the old person in the retirement home turned into like a big robot and started consuming the city?
Is that Akira?
Yeah, Akira.
Yeah.
Yep. So like, you know, the classics.
Ghost in a Shell.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah. Ghost in the Shell is sick.
Okay.
But yeah.
So love you those films. So did you start with anime and go to manga, or did you do both?
Both.
Okay.
Because my friend Duck pointed out Lone Wolf and Cub by Kazuo Koike.
Okay.
And the illustrator, Goseki Kojima. They wrote Lone Wolf and Cub series, and the books were super fucking expensive but worth every penny. And it's about a guy that travels with his kid, and he's an assassin for hire, and he has morals, so he won't kill for like, you know, he won't kill kids, and he won't do heinous stuff. He usually goes after parties that have done wrong to someone. But the kid starts getting involved when he gets a little older, like 3 years old. He starts like distracting people so his dad can lop off their heads or something.
So like the dad and daughter in Kick-Ass, huh?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, but a lot more gory. It was just a lot of swords and impalements and blood. And the kid like would piss. He pissed off of a hill once on the soldiers so that his dad could attack him.
Well, if you remember in Kick-Ass, Big Daddy does get set on fire while his daughter is fighting bad guys. So
right. Yeah, but if I remember correctly, those two films, right?
I didn't watch the second one.
You didn't?
No.
It's good. Yeah, it's not too bloody. It's not too gory. It's all more funny. It's comedic more so than.
I think the series. I started to watch the second one and I just stopped because like I felt like it was more about like playing up the gory aspects of the first one, and then there was like some like joke where like he was trying to like sexually assault somebody in there, and I thought it was like in really bad taste, and I was like, this is stupid. I'm turning it off.
No, yeah, there was bad writing in the second one for sure.
Yeah.
And then the other guy I liked was Junji Ito.
You keep telling me about him. I've looked at his art, but I haven't read anything by him yet.
Yeah, he's a Japanese horror mangaka.
Yeah.
And mangeka. I always say that wrong. Mangeka.
Mangaka.
Which just means a guy that writes manga. So most of the most notable works included Tomi, a series chronicling an immortal girl who drives her stricken admirers to madness.
I like it.
And then Spiral into Horror. Uzumaki is my favorite.
Which is the one with the spirals.
Yeah, three-volume series about a town obsessed with spirals. Some guy, like, at the beginning, first chapter.
Spoiler alert.
He, like, well, I don't really think most people are going to look into this shit anyway. He spirals himself into a little case in his house. Mm. He kills himself by turning himself into a spiral, and they find him in this shape with his, like, eyes bulged out and his tongue all crazy.
Interesting.
The illustrations are amazing. You got to check it out.
Yeah. I've looked at the artwork for it, and it's definitely horror inspired, and I like it. I've never read any manga that's horror inspired.
Yeah, I'm going to read Gyo next, which is a two volume story where fish are controlled by a strain of sentient bacteria called the Death Stench. I think that's going to be pretty sick.
Interesting. My introduction to anime and manga, I started with anime first. Again, I started with Naruto, and then I think my mom caught wind and was like, nixed that right in the bud, and I wasn't allowed to really watch it till I was like, I think I was about 15 or 16 is when I started to really get into it. And I went back to Naruto and Bleach. I started with all like the Shonen Jump battle animes.
What about Dragon Ball Z? Did you like that?
Not as much, but I did enjoy certain aspects of it. Dragon Ball Z for me was a little bit past. Dragon Ball Z was a little bit more like when I was younger. So that was when it was big. So at the time that I started watching, Naruto and Bleach and One Piece were the big ones. And I actually could never get into One Piece for like the longest time. I was super big in the Naruto, and then like Bleach was my second favorite. But more recently I've started watching One Piece with my kids, because you know, they're picky about what they want to watch, and they actually love One Piece because it's pirates and stuff like that and superheroes fighting each other essentially. And I get to enjoy that, and they enjoy it. So it's a win-win for me. And then I also have, for the past couple of years, really been into Berserk by Kentaro Miura. It's that's another one where the art in it's like super, super pretty, like the Junji Ito stuff. The first maybe couple volumes like aren't as like well done. But like as you progress in the series, like he starts actually taking inspiration from like classic art and stuff like that and kind of incorporating it in to like this really bloody dark world. And it's really good. And I really like it.
I like where you're going with that.
Yeah, I encourage everyone. I know Kentaro Miura, he passed away last year, which is sad because he was still writing Berserk and they still don't know if they're going to finish it or not. But I encourage everybody to read it because it has all the things that we like to talk about. It has the blood and the gore. It has the nihilism. It has the philosophy. It even has, if you pay close enough attention, like little call outs to like Carl Jung and psychoanalysis and stuff like that. It's got everything that we like to talk about in it. And I think nice. Everyone should read it. So yeah. But my next author would probably be Jim Butcher. And I don't know if he's super well known by anybody who doesn't read fantasy. His biggest series that he writes is called The Dresden Files, which is about a wizard based out of Chicago, actually, which is really cool. And he pretty much deals with supernatural threats. And he's a private investigator. And he actually, on his door, it says wizard and private investigator. He's openly tells people like he's a wizard and people don't believe him, like, ha ha ha, you're really funny, you're a wizard. And then he deals with all these supernatural threats. And in the first couple books, they're more like one-off mysteries that he's trying to solve for people. And then as you continue going, it gets more into the politics of like the supernatural. So like there's vampire courts that are battling one another and the wizard's council. There's these entities called the Dark Ones, who are like these Lovecraftian beings that nobody really knows about. There's a Black Council of wizards who are practicing black magic that the White Council has to deal with. There's necromancy, zombies, vampires, werewolves. He always incorporates some like mythological child's creature into it. In one story, he has the Billy Goat's Gruff. That's a great story. So they're really cool and quirky and good. I recently started reading the Dresden Files because I wasn't super into them when I was younger. But when I was younger, I was into another series he wrote called Codex Illyria. And that was all based around like this Roman society and these people who could use different elements, kind of like Avatar, I guess you could say, but their elements would like take the shape of animals and stuff like that, and they would use them against one another.
What is that called in Harry Potter? The Patronus?
Yes, the Patronus. It's kind of like that, I guess. Yeah. He actually wrote it based off a challenge I found out later. Somebody challenged him. They said, I bet you can't write a series about anything. And he said, give me a couple topics and I'll write a series based off of it. And he said, I bet you couldn't write Pokemon in Roman times. And then he wrote Codex Illyria, and it's pretty banger. So, yeah.
Whoever told him that idea is the the true architect here.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Pokemon
in Roman times. Funny.
he sounds like somebody that you and I would be friends with and enjoy too, because like the Dresden Files, he took a writing class and he didn't really know what he wanted to write, so his teacher kept pushing him and pushing him, and finally he wrote up this plan for like 25 books following this Dresden guy, like, and he laid out like kind of like the cornerstones, like what each book would be and the journeys and stuff he would take. And his teacher was like, that's great, but I don't think you're going to find a publisher who's going to agree to let you make 25 books in the same series. And he was like, well, now you told me I can't do it, so I got to go do it. And then he's currently doing it. And I enjoy that type of fuck you energy.
What book is he on out of 25?
Ooh, I think he's on 17 nice. Or 18. So
he's going to do it. I hope that teacher's still alive when he's done.
Right. I think he's conceptualized. He wants to write like 22 to 25, and he wants to end a series with like a trilogy that's like a post-apocalyptic thing. It sounds really dope. I hope that he gets to finish it all, because he's in his 50s, but he comes out with like a book every other year. So he writes.
I might have
quickly.
To check that out.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it.
I'm on a big John Grisham and Stephen King kick right now. I'm reading The Chamber by John Grisham and Skeleton Key short stories by Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Wonderful stuff. But anyway, when I'm done with all that bullshit, I'll get to. Are there a lot of deaths in the Dresden one? Dresden series?
There are some deaths. The more fun part of it is in almost every book, the main character gets the shit beat out of him. Like, the books don't end. They're not feel good books. Like, they don't end very happy. Like, each time you're like, man, how much more can Harry take? Oh, he burned his hand to a crisp. Oh, he lost this girl that he really loves. Oh, like, it's not, I don't read them to like they're funny too. Like, he's a legitimately funny writer. Like, there's
times you walk away feeling like your life is better than this guy.
Yeah. And he's funny too. He's a good writer. He's got some good one-liners and stuff. Like, I'm not a person where, like, if I watch comedy or if I read a book that's funny, like, I'll generally laugh out loud. Like, if I find a joke in comedy funny, I might like smile, but I'm not like super boisterous laughing out loud like some people. But I've read Dresden Files and he's legit made me like chuckle out loud, which is very hard to do.
The times I've heard you vocalize your laughter is mainly after dark humor.
Yes.
So he must have dark humor.
Oh, yes. Yes.
My next one was Anton Zander LaVey, just because I was going through a really dark time and a lot of confusion and questioning a lot of things. And so what's going to help you? The Satanic Bible. You hear that, kids? Anyway, so I picked up the Satanic Bible.
Counter argument.
No, I know. You don't like the guy, and we're going to get into it.
No, that's fine. All right. The Satanic Bible is all good. But if you're not having good times and you want to become a real man, you read Nietzsche.
If you don't want to be bored to death, read the Satanic Bible.
Yes, the Satanic Bible is much more digestible than Nietzsche.
Yeah.
But if you really want to cerebrally flex.
You're right. Get a dictionary, get a thesaurus, and pick up some Nietzsche, and you will be on your way.
You don't even need that anymore. You got phones. Google it.
Yeah. So, I didn't really get into the magical stuff of his, like that you have to have some type of dogma to be a happy person. I don't agree with him there. I just really like the whole self-love and you are, if you want to believe in God, believe in yourself, make you the God. I like that.
You are God.
And then I later on, I matured a bit and found it a bit too narcissistic, and I'm not as into that whole self-God crap as before. I think we're all equally great or equally shitty, but we're definitely all equal. And
If you want to be edgy and scare your parents, don't buy the Satanic Bible.
Right.
Buy Simon Heath's Necronomicon, because you'll have a lot more fun with it.
And things might actually crawl out of your closet at night. My hat.
I didn't say do the rituals in him, but if you want to, go ahead. Fuck with the energy. See what happens. So Anton LaVey. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't write down any like philosophers that like I really like. I was going more with like the foundational people who've affected me. But I guess like people who are like somewhat more philosophical now that I'm older and like I understand things, like, and I guess they're not really, I mean, they're writers, but they write for comics, but they write the scripts. They don't do the drawing. So I'm not counting it. But Neil Gaiman and his Sandman. He also wrote American Gods. I really like Neil Gaiman. He also wrote Coraline, which is one of my favorite animation movies of all time. Grant Morrison, he wrote The Invisibles. He's written some Batman comics. The Invisibles is where it's at because The Invisibles is straight up The Matrix. The Wachowski sisters, they were the brothers at the time, but now they are the sisters. They pretty much straight up jacked most of the concepts for The Matrix from The Invisibles. And they were even like passing around comics on the set, it was said, to like show people like how they wanted certain shots or things to look. Even Morpheus kind of like looks like King Mob, the main character in The Invisibles. And then Alan Moore, he's written the classics of Watchmen, V for Vendetta, countless awesome, awesome stories that both are anti-superhero and anti-establishment. And those three, as far as like comic book writers, I've always found them to be the most interesting writers because they're very into philosophy and the darker side of things and questioning reality and questioning power structures and stuff like that. And so I've loved them for a very long time. Alan Moore, probably the most. Grant Morrison and Neil Gaiman are more recent loves, but all three of those guys, amazing writers.
Yeah, I didn't even think to add comic books. Yeah, I've been reading comics.
I think I wasn't going to, but then I decided to, but we should probably do like an episode on like our favorite comics.
Because I've been reading comics since I was probably six.
Yeah.
I was a huge collector of comics.
So maybe we'll do our favorite comics one.
Yeah.
Sometime soon.
Sounds fun. You're going to keep going?
No, go with your next one.
Or actually, why don't Neil deGrasse Tyson. What? Yeah, go ahead.
Why don't we both talk about Anne Rice? Because I have her on here.
Yeah, sure.
Anne Rice is more recent. I feel like I may have read her when I was younger, but might not remember it. I've always loved the movie Interview with the Vampire. I've known that movie for like a decade and I love it. I think it's one of Brad Pitt's best performances. And I've recently gotten into, I've been listening to her audiobooks because I don't have time to read all the books I want to read. So I've been listening to her audiobooks and I love the way she writes because she's like super, super poetic and super descriptive. I'm on Queen of the Damned right now and I'm excited to get on to Tale of the Body Thief, I think is the next one.
Have you read Memnock?
No, because I'm going chronologically. So I'm gonna read The Vampire Chronicles up to the Tale of the Body Thief, and then I'm gonna read the three Mayfair Witches books because I guess they come in later in the series, and then I'm gonna continue. But it's on there. I know it's your favorite.
I'm telling you, man, once you get to that, you're gonna be raving about it. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah, I think
I almost read it twice, like in a row.
Yeah, I don't normally read. That's another thing. Like, I don't normally read books multiple times in a row. There's only one author whose books I've read multiple times in a row. But I could definitely see revisiting her books because I don't know. I just like the way she writes. It's like descriptive and poetic.
Right.
It makes me want to be a better writer.
A lot of depth.
Yeah. It's almost romance novel-y, but not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She's really good. I like it. I like her.
Yeah, she gives you the feels.
Mm-hmm. She makes me want to go visit New Orleans and walk around the cemeteries and stuff like that. Like, it sounds really, she makes it sound really nice.
Yeah. No, she's definitely very descriptive and amazing.
And for those who like Anne Rice on the Vampire Chronicles, I guess she sold the rights for all the books with the Mayfair Witches included to AMC, and they're going to be doing a TV show of it, which I think, I don't know. I personally have, I like the TV show model a lot more than the movie model because you can do more with the TV show. And I feel like with the amount of books she's written and what I've read so far, it'd do way better as a TV series than it would.
Although Kathy Reich's books are much better to read than watching the movie or the series Bones on TV, which those are based off of her books.
Oh, I didn't know.
In my opinion, I think her books are better. I mean, they're very redundant. Like, why would a human forensic anthropologist be caught up being kidnapped by like biker gangs and shit? That's just unrealistic. But other than that, good books.
Didn't know that Bones was based off a TV show, but okay.
Yeah, Bones is based off of Kathy Reich's novels. Yeah. And I've read about, I think, 7 of them. There's a lot of them.
Okay.
Cool. So Neil deGrasse Tyson is the only guy I've read his book twice in a row, mainly because I needed to understand all the concepts. But yeah, his book, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry, I read twice in a row. And it's a wonderful layman's explanation of the cosmos. He breaks things down from the beginning of the Big Bang, what was happening with the particles and how atoms formed in space and what the temperature was. And yeah, I made you read it. I bought it for you, right?
I've read it the one time and barely grasped most of it. It's one of those ones where like I think you should take it a chapter at a time and like sit with it.
I found if you read it twice in a row. You can get a lot of the concepts. You can go about it different ways.
It's almost like a philosophy book, except with the philosophy book, you have to read the chapter multiple times in a row before going on to the next one.
Yep. I'm still in the middle of the same Ludwig Wittgenstein book I've had for 2 years.
I wanted to tell you, I was listening to something last night. It was a podcast by these people called Acid Horizon, and they're talking about imposter syndrome. And somebody was actually bringing up Wittgenstein. And I was like, hey, you told me about that guy because I'd never heard of him before you mentioned him.
Yeah.
So,
he's a realist.
It's interesting how things spiral back around all the time.
It is. Mm. It's almost like Fibonacci. Go watch that episode.
That's a great episode. If you guys don't like that one, get out of the comment section. Sorry. Anyway,
so the end of Astrophysics for People in a Hurry was amazing because he goes into all these weird little facts, like how there's more atoms in a grain of sand. No, there's over 50, no, 80, no, 50 quintillion atoms inside of a grain of sand. Think about that. That's 18 zeros after the 50. There's that many atoms in one grain of sand.
Nope,
and then he also goes into telling us that there's more molecules inside of 8 ounces of water than there are 8 ounce portions of water in the entire oceans of the world combined. I just love thinking about shit like that. So
you've confused people with your math. Now they're going to get angry.
Here's layman's terms. One grain of sand has a shit ton of subatomic particles. That one's easy enough.
There you go.
A shit ton.
There you go. A shit and ton.
There's also more quantity of things inside of... I can't shut up. there's more molecules in 8 ounces than there are 8 ounce portions in the oceans combined. Go read the book. It's a great book. Anyway, the other nonfiction person I love is Noam Chomsky, which is another guy you have to read a chapter over and over again to understand. He uses words that normal people don't use.
I don't think so.
Well, really? You also are a hell of a lot more articulate and your vocabulary is more extensive than most people I know.
Oh, I don't know. I think like compared to the philosophy stuff I've read that Noam Chomsky is really easy to read.
Correct. And most people don't read philosophy stuff.
I guess. I'm sorry. Sorry. I was not trying to sound pretentious.
No, well, I don't think you don't have to try. No, but I think your reading level is at a caliber that is above average. And yeah. So for me, grabbing Noam Chomsky at the age of 19 and trying to digest it, it just did not make sense at first. But then I met the man in real life in Bloomington, Illinois, and had a conversation with him. And I realized he's just a normal guy and I need to not be so scared. So I picked up a dictionary and started learning what the hell he was talking about. And at this moment, when I read Noam Chomsky, I understand what he's saying. But at the age of 19, there's no way.
Now, that's what I was saying. Like, I think most people, like in your late 20s to early 30s, like, I don't think you would need a dictionary to understand.
You'd be surprised. You would be surprised, sir.
I mean,
you'd be surprised.
I was going to say, I'd hope our viewers are a little bit more well-read.
Our viewers, probably.
I don't know. I've seen some comments recently.
Did you stop talking about the comments?
I can't.
They all
can't
love you anyway. Seems. Oh yeah, last nonfiction guy, Jack Fresco, which
you
I've been
keep
trying
telling
to
me either. About him, and I need to get his book. And I
yeah, he's a keep... futurist. Well, he was. He died, but he was a futurist, and he had all these great ideas. What?
He's a futurist, and he died. I like it. I don't know.
He was here. Now he's not. But read his books. And yeah, he's the best book I read. Well, the only book I read all the way. I read two other of his books, like partially. But the best that money can't buy. Hmm. He goes, it's called The Best That Money Can't Buy: Beyond Politics, Poverty, and War. And he tells us how to become a one world resource based economy with libraries and resources being free to everyone, which I totally agree with. And he posits that we are naturally driven to be productive just to survive, and that people would eventually be willing to sacrifice time and energy to make their society prosper, which I also agree. I feel like so let's say Elon Musk's prediction of the future comes true, and AI takes a lot of jobs from us, and a lot of us are unemployed. He's saying that universal income?
Universal basic income?
Yeah, that's going to be necessary.
Yeah,
but I think agree. If that did happen, people would eventually get bored, or they would start doing their own crafts, or they would start writing their own books, or they would start doing something, because people are naturally productive.
Yeah, that's kind of Andrew Yang's entire spiel. I'm assuming he read this book. Is like, if you give people a basic income, some of those people are still going to choose to go out and, you know, hustle and work, because some people really like, you know, being lumberjacks or driving trucks across the country, or there are some people who are just naturally inclined to work. But if you give somebody a universal basic income, maybe they decide, okay, well, if I want extra money, then I can maybe work at the coffee shop part-time, and then I would have all the time in the world to work on my books, and through that I would change the world, and we would have a more egalitarian society.
Yep.
But I work 40 hours a week, I don't have the energy for that right now.
In Jacques Fresco's future,
okay,
he said everything's resource-based. So all the resources, everything you need to eat, mm-hmm. clothes, healthcare, it all is provided. There is no money.
Interesting. So, I like it.
Yeah. And so, like, you're just provided all these things.
So then all you would have is just great art.
Great art, great science, great new things to help the planet. All sorts of things can come out of it. But he said that people could still be rewarded with attention and acknowledgement, which really is at the base of all of our ambition anyway. It's not so much the paycheck as much as leaving a legacy, which we discussed this week. But like that's pretty much our natural instinct, is to want to leave an imprint or some positive, leave the earth better off than how we found it.
And so, if we ever were to achieve this more egalitarian society, like he's talking about, would you then be okay with like us traveling to the stars and stuff like that? And maybe
if we could do it without hurting the planet.
Yeah. Like if we became like resource-based economy like this, and there was no money and there was no need to overconsume, and we figured out a way to like, not only help the ecosystems on our earth, but maybe create new ones on other planets.
His whole argument is we would never have to leave Earth, because we would fix the health of the Earth.
Yeah. But if we wanted to, you know?
Yeah, if you wanted to, sure.
Because there's...
If you can find a clean way to do it, and there's a reason for it.
Okay.
Because a lot of his thing was about practicality and how it's going to benefit society.
I mean, I think it would benefit, yeah.
Yeah. Like, so if you could make a plausible argument on how that would benefit society, then I'm sure he would have totally agreed. But he envisioned stuff like everything, houses being constructed out of earth-friendly materials, solar film, this voltaic film he keeps talking about, covering all the houses. Every home is free electricity because they're entirely coated in this solar voltaic film. That can bend. It's like with nanotechnology. Huh. And so all of his homes are circular, so they can get more heat, more of the solar
right.
element. And right. they're like little pods. So these big machines can snap off your house off of like a huge skyscraper, because he believes, like I do, that you should live building upwards and not outwards. So you're not taking up so much land. But these things, these machines take your home and they can move you. Say you want to move to another state. They can literally ship your home with these awesome machines. And you plop you right on a different tower in another city. And everyone can move when they want. You just you fill out a form and you wait and you talk to there's a board. And you say, I want to move here. They say why. You say your reason and they discuss it. And then you can move.
I know he's not nonfiction, but it almost sounds like a fictional universe, because
totally. And he has this place in Florida you can visit and see all of his he built little models of how his cities would look.
That's cool.
And all this other stuff, but a lot of it was like turbines. He envisioned turbines in the ocean were not harming the marine life. They're mm-hmm. enclosed, but they could take the power of the waves and the power of the ocean and put that into the cities as well. All sorts of things to generate power, and his freight ships manufactured products on their way to the location rather than having a factory somewhere that has to put it on a dock that puts it on the ship to move it. The freight ship itself was the manufacturing system. So the machines in the freight ship would manufacture the goods on their way to the location. So they would never have to dock and get more crates or anything. I don't know. He had a lot of really cool ideas, and I don't know how many of them are realistic, but I love almost every single one of his ideas.
I have to get that book. I keep meaning to, and I keep forgetting.
I have to give it back, though. My friend signed it for me.
I have so many books that I want and need to read.
Me too. I'm in the middle of 5 books right now.
I keep buying books. About it. I keep buying books, too. I'm amassing a collection. Essentially, I'm going to have all my books, you know, fall over on me and kill me. And that's fine. That's how I want to die. Death by books. Anyway,
way to go.
So up to this point, with the exception of Neil Gaiman, Grant Morrison, and Alan Moore, they're a little bit more nihilistic. Up to this point, most of the books I've read are more whimsical, feel good. There are dark elements to it. Like, yeah, I guess even in Redwall, there's beheadings and impalements and stuff. But like for the most part, like it's always good is triumphing over evil. The bad guys lose. There's a clear good and bad line. And then I got into George R. R. Martin. I picked up A Game of Thrones when I was 15. I read that one, and then I read A Clash of Kings, and I think I was a third or halfway through. I believe it's what is it? It's Game of Thrones. I don't know. It was the third book in the series. And then I got sidetracked because my mother was finally like becoming more lax and letting us watch Star Wars and stuff like that. So then I got super into Star Wars, and I didn't pick George R. R. Martin back up for a very long time. Because I consumed the Star Wars movies, the video games, the Dark Horse comics for Star Wars are awesome. The new Marvel Star Wars comics are complete garbage compared to the Dark Horse comics. And I'm really glad that Lucasfilm has renewed their contract with Dark Horse, because they make the best. There's also a bunch of books for the expanded universe about Luke and his wife, Mara Jade, and their kids. So I got super into the Star Wars world for a long time because, again, space battles, lightsabers, Sith, Jedi. And one of the reasons I love Star Wars, too, is I'm really big into other species. Like, I like stories that are big and expansive, and it's not just boring humans in them, but there's tons of other sentient life forms. So Star Wars has been and always will be one of my favorite universes of all time. George Lucas is a freaking genius. But then George R. R. Martin got rights for an HBO show and I heard whisperings of it and I was like, okay. Well, I remember reading the first book and kind of liking it, and then I kind of dropped it because I got involved with other things. And I picked it back up before the TV show. And I have never read 5 books so fast in my life and then gone back and reread the first couple. His world is immersive. I know some people, they don't like his prose. I know some people, they don't like how violent he can be and stuff
like
that.
Which one is this?
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that's sitting on my shelves. I don't know. I might pick it up.
I just enjoyed coming from somebody who really loves fantasy in a medieval setting. I enjoyed the grittiness and the real take and the very soft magic system that he had. Because in Redwall, there's no magic. In Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, there's some. And the rules for it aren't very clear. And then with George R. R. Martin, you get this real realistic, gritty, medieval, almost Dark Ages world. And there's dragons, which are some of my favorite fantasy creatures of all time. I love dragons. And there's like these really soft, dark magic rules. And then there's also, you know, this threat of the others beyond the wall, which are like able to raise the dead. So there's necromancy and stuff. And there's all these like small mystical elements interwoven into this very real world. And George R. R. Martin is probably one of the people who kind of gave me a turning point in my writing style and what I wanted to write, because before my stories were very black and white, good guy, bad guy. And with George, he kind of makes you realize that there aren't really a whole lot of good guys. There's a lot more shades of gray, and there are truly monsters in the world that are clearly bad, but maybe some of the actions the good guys take against those monsters are questionable as well. And so I liked the lens through which he made fantasy. Some people would say he kind of ruined fantasy by making it darker, but I think that the genre was stagnant and it kind of needed to become a little bit more realistic in that manner. And I wouldn't say that my writing's going to be anywhere near as nihilistic as George's is, because he can be pretty cynical, but he's definitely helped me be more of a realistic writer. And he definitely also inspired me to start writing different stories in my own novels and stuff like that. Because for a long time, I wasn't writing novels, and he made me really want to write long form novels. So, yeah.
So your books are going to be filled with anthropomorphism?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. There's not a story that I've written thus far that doesn't have anthropomorphic races in it. I enjoy the concept. And even I didn't even realize it, but in Codex Alira, it's mainly like humans. And then there's this race across the sea from them called the Canum, and they're essentially anthropomorphic wolves. And like, that's a series that like I really love. I really like anthropomorphic sentient beings. And if it's just humans in it, which is the other great thing that Game of Thrones does, like it's all just humans. You know, there are dragons in it, but it's mainly just humans and their perspective.
Well, what are those? What are those dudes that walk the ice people?
They're not really in the books. There are a little bit, but not really. Oh. They're the whites. They're called the others. Yeah.
Yeah. You and my wife pretty much read the same books.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all those books you talked about are on my shelves in the library downstairs, but I've never read them because I'm all boring. I'm going to read Tom Clancy next after, you know, I read like Dean Koontz or.
I've never liked Tom Clancy. I've never been able to get into him.
I love like spies and CIA and any type of military crap. I still play Call of Duty like I'm a fucking idiot. So I guess I'm pretty boring when it comes to fiction. I've never been into like fantasy. I did like Harry Potter. I did like The Hobbit. I read The Hobbit, but I never wanted to read the rest of the Lord of the Rings.
I think a lot of mine has to do with, if we get into the like psychological aspect of it, mine has to do with going to a completely different world that isn't anything like this world. And even when it comes to my writing, like I'm creating worlds where I know the rules and all the mechanisms of that world and what's going to happen in it and where the characters are going to go. And so it's almost like a control mechanism and also escapism too.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like it. I understand the reasons. I think if I wrote a book, I would have it be like the movie Scarface, but having Scarface survive and like, what?
Weren't you writing a book about,
I was writing a book about aliens.
Yeah.
It was going to be a three-part. It was going to be a trilogy. Yeah.
I ran out of steam.
I realized I wasn't that great of a writer as far as creative writing goes. I'm good at writing songs, like lyrics. I'm good at poetry. But as far as like, I get out of patience. I'm like, these are the people. This is what happened. Goodbye.
Yeah.
That's how...
Fair enough.
But yeah, it was going to be about aliens that were like, scale like the size of a large oak tree, like they're like 50 feet tall.
Don't give away your ideas to the 40 people that watch.
I'm not gonna say the name of them or a lot of details, but like they come to Earth and they basically take us back to their planet and do studies on us, much like we do studies on mice. And eventually, and I think book two, some people escaped and formed like a little city that the aliens didn't know where they were, like in one of their alleys, you know, because we're so small compared to them. We made like a little village for ourselves, and then we proliferated, and eventually third book, we became their pets, like house cats and dogs. And like if you needed a knee surgery or something, they would like take you in, you get euthanized and do it just like we do cats and dogs and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
But like, I didn't know where I was going with it. I didn't know how the lead antagonists were going to, you know, make it if they were. I'm very dark, so I really like when the lead characters just die, right? Like 25%.
You would love Game of Thrones.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I really like non-Western, non-hero film,
yeah,
non-hero type books. But yeah, I am more boring, I guess. I'm like my dad. I like to read like, you know, military, lawyer, like, I like Stephen King. He gets a little bit magical.
Oh yeah. But Stephen King's all his books are connected.
Yeah. And very dark.
Yeah. And very.
I'm the Skeleton Key. Have you read that? No. The short stories?
No.
Oh yeah. Like one, like just leaves you hanging. Like, you know, they're going to die and he just leaves you there.
Yeah.
Love it.
I will say The Mist. I will say most of what I read for about 15 years was all fantasy. Like, and more recently in the past, like I'd say 5 years, I've been branching out more. So I've read more, you know, little bits and pieces of philosophy, little bits and pieces of psychology and stuff like that, that aren't fiction. But as far as fiction goes, I've been branching more into some horror stuff like Anne Rice. I would consider her novels horror. They can be pretty graphic at times. I've been trying to read some Stephen King. H.P. Lovecraft was the last one on my list. H.P. Lovecraft. He's interesting to me because he put all of his works in the public domain so you can use the pantheon he created. And he's all about cosmic horror and the helplessness of everything. And I think he's such a good writer and he's so interesting that there are literally practitioners of like the occult and magic who like will call upon some of the entities in his books and actually like get results from him. Like that's how like deep his lore goes. And that's pretty fascinating.
I'm under the opinion that if you believe enough in something, it probably will manifest itself in some way.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I think they call them tulpas. Like the belief, like in Slenderman, like if enough people believe in Slenderman, like you might actually be able to get Slenderman to materialize because there's like that psychic energy image out in the universe. And if enough people like believe in it, then it could become an actual
entity. I mean, who's to say that reality isn't what we envision? I mean, no one can prove it.
This is true.
Anyway, that was a fun debate for another day. That
was deep. But yeah, so I was very, very into the fantasy, and then I've gotten more into some real stuff and then horror. Like I'm starting to enjoy horror a little bit more, but only like the good stuff, like the Stephen King and the goats. So, yeah.
I love it. This has been a fun, fun discussion.
Yeah.
You fucking nerd.
I'm the nerd. You're the one who reads like Neil deGrasse Tyson twice, like back to back.
Yeah, that was a good book.
You're the bigger nerd.
I guess I'm the more classical nerd. You're like the fantasy nerd, like the Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, except I also read like Jung and Foucault, so I don't know. I don't even know.
I mean, Jung is pretty out there.
He's very out there.
Like, I'm more into like the Freud and the Adler, you know, the more grounded in what we consider reality in modern times. But see, Jung went out. Jung went on the East. He went in the Eastern philosophy and he came back.
And that's the funny thing, too.
The magician. He's a magician.
He is. Yeah. And we talked about the postmodern French philosophers. And I'm much more inclined to like somebody who's like Jacques Lacan, who was really into Freud, but he took Freud in a.
Yeah, I don't like how over-sexualized Freud's thoughts were, but.
Well, maybe you'd like Lacan then, but he gets. Oof, he depresses me.
I like it already. I will start reading it.
Just I'll send you a video. It's on the reel, and it will give you anxiety.
I don't know, man. My goal is always to read something more sad than what's already in my head. Is it a thing? I don't know.
Like, share, and subscribe. comment nice things, please.
No, comment whatever you want. I'm enjoying
it. Yeah, comment what's in your heart. You know what? If you want to be if you need us to be your punching bags, that's fine.
Tell me how conservative I am and how I don't love humanity and I don't want us to overcome and that I love the system.
Yes.
And the man.
This is
tell
all
me
gonna,
how much of a dick I am, please.
I was saying this is all going to be out of context because what's currently happening is going to be like 2 months down the road.
Yep.
So have fun. Actually, this is a nice little trail. You're going to have to go through all our videos and figure out what we're discussing and talking about. And enjoy this little
you
Easter
know, create hunt. A YouTube account just to comment. Have a good day.
I think that's both creepy that you found that out, but I also think it's creepy that somebody did that. So
I've been called worse.
Love you. Bye. Yep.